podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Howard Yuzerski of the Howard Yuzerski Gallery in Boston, Massachusetts. We're talking about the John O'Reilly exhibition, New Territory. We're going to find out more about John O'Reilly and what sorts of new territory he's endeavoring. Enjoy! This episode is brought to you by McGinn's Roxborough Maple Irish Whiskey. A big thank you to our sponsor, McGinn's Roxborough Maple Irish Whiskey. I've been involved with this brand from the beginning, and I'm really happy and excited to see what's become. I don't drink, but I love a good story. The history behind it is what got me. It's an old family story. Henry Stratford Pearse owned the longest-running distillery in Galway in the 19th century. So we've combined the Pearse whiskey with, did I mention the part of the family that were Vermont sugarers? They produced the high-quality maple syrup associated with Vermont. So we've combined the Pearse whiskey with the maple, which gives it a really nice, even taste, I'm told. All the tastings I've been a part of have had a really good response. It's through this story that I was introduced to Hugh Lane, who was actually the inspiration for this podcast. Check out RoxboroughWhiskey.com to learn more about the whiskey and the story. So tell me about John O'Reilly. What is his story?
So John O'Reilly, interesting story. He was born in 1930. Got his MA at the Art Institute of Chicago. And undergraduate work at Syracuse. Started out basically. Okay, once he got out of school, this is kind of important.
Okay.
His first job was this is in the late 50s. Was teaching art history at the University of New Hampshire. That was his first teaching gig. And because he was going to be teaching art history, he immersed himself in learning about it. And it's significant because it's become one of the central themes in his work, referencing art history. I think that job kind of like, in a way, was very instrumental in the later work. He basically started making mature work, I would say, in the late 60s. And I started showing him in 1985 when I still had a gallery in Andover. And he had an exhibition at that time at the Addison Gallery of American Art, which is the museum at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts. I don't know if you know that institution, but it's a very, very good museum. They have started at about time in the 30s at about the same time as the Whitney, which is also their name is the Whitney Museum of American Art, and the Addison is the Addison Gallery of American Art. So their collection is pretty much like the Whitney's, at least started out to be strictly American artists. Anyway. I had a gallery in Andover, Massachusetts. I started in 1968. And by 1985, I had come to realize that this was getting to be trying to sell the kind of art I like to sell in the suburbs was not working out so well. In the meantime, I saw this exhibition at Andover, and that started our relationship. And 3 years later, when I moved my gallery to Boston, he was one of my inaugural exhibitors.
Cool.
So he's basically a collage artist. This is what he's done all his life. It's cut and paste. He does have a few restrictions in that he does not alter any of his source material by directly drawing or painting on him. That's a rule he set up for himself. And he's sort of, his work has taken off, you know, and it took off. I started showing him in 88, and one of the things that's amazing about him is that he's a very inventive artist, and I was able to do exhibitions every 2 years with him, up until right now.
That's really cool.
It's a long relationship.
You've known him for a long time.
And it's been a great collaboration, and I think we've definitely been helpful to one another.
Right. Well, you had mentioned that he'd had a career in art history, but I had read something that he had a background in psychology. Did he ever work in that field?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting story, too, actually. His partner, who was also an artist, and he ended up in Worcester, Massachusetts. Serendipity. They were driving through Worcester to go to Maine, and their car broke down. And, you know, like these things happen, they ended up never leaving.
Right.
They eventually both had jobs at the Worcester State Mental Hospital. They split the job because they're both artists, so they would work 2.5 days apiece.
Uh-huh.
And one worked with people who were depressed, uh-huh, and the other worked with people who had schizophrenia. So that definitely was another thing that affected, you know, that I think had an influence on his work, that interaction with mentally ill patients and the whole idea of it.
Right. Well, which did which? Which did the schizophrenia and which did the depressed?
I think John was dealt with schizophrenia, and his partner Jen dealt with depressives.
That's hilarious. So their car just broke down, and they were just
out because they were both able to make they both have a paying job, but able to still continue making it work.
That's perfect. That's a perfect perfect solution.
Yeah, they both retired in 1992, and when they retired, that's when John's work really kind of exploded because he had, you know, all this extra time. It wasn't only the time in the studio, but it was the idea that you didn't have this other gig dealing with, which is also exhausting.
Right.
And would impede, you know, your production.
Right, right, absolutely.
As an artist.
Yeah, totally, totally.
So it's an interesting background.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, and I think that's perfect that they just kind of like broke down and were like, okay, so we're gonna get a job at a mental hospital, with their background in art history.
Well, they were art therapists.
They were what?
Art therapists.
Oh, okay, okay.
I should have. That's kind of an important part of the whole story.
Okay.
they were using art. They were using art therapy. I'm not saying that they invented the art therapy field, but they were certainly pioneers in that field.
Uh huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Art can tell you a lot about, you know, particularly, you know, people who are mentally ill. It can be very interesting in terms of the art that's made.
Right, right. Absolutely. Because, yeah, if you, like art therapy, like I guess what they're doing, if you have the patient draw, you know, what they're thinking, that can be, you know, kind of disturbing, kind of scary, or it can be a real window to the soul, I guess.
Well, exactly, and a way of kind of like communicating with them.
Right, right. So they pioneered that?
Well, I would say so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is early on. We're talking now the 70s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there was a lot of art therapy going on back then.
No, probably not.
I don't know whether they were ever recognized as pioneers in that field, but, you know, they had to be early on in it. It would be an interesting thing to kind of find out whether art therapy was something that people used before then.
Yeah.
I suspect not, but you never know.
Right, right. I just think that's really cool. I was also curious. It says his photo montages are a collage of found art, or found prints, rather. What exactly is that?
So, what did you say exactly? That the photo montages are what?
I'm sorry. A collage of found prints.
Well, so the photo montages are interesting. That started kind of in the early 80s, and he was working with a black and white Polaroid camera.
Cool.
And what he would do was make a setup in the studio,
mm-hmm,
and he would take the Polaroid camera and photograph that setup in different angles,
mm-hmm,
and then cut the Polaroids up and make the montage from that.
That's pretty cool.
Is that clear what I just said?
Yes. So he would take different pictures from different angles. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but first of all, he would also do a setup. You know, so he had again, this is where the art history thing comes in. Mm-hmm. He would make little standing figures of different pictures from different art history books and interweave that with a lot of his own personal history, because a lot of his work is autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it deals with, I think, a psychology. So there was they were very complex pictures, those montages.
Mm-hmm. Right. You said that his work is autobiographical. How so?
Well, I think a lot of artists' work is, and Sandra, the woman we're going to talk to, is the same way. How he would use that, for instance, there were certain, with him, there was an iconography that would be helpful to know. For instance, there's a famous, the Velazquez Las Meninas painting.
Mm-hmm.
The king and queen of Spain. I believe is in that picture. So he would take, a Polaroid of that, and use that in a montage. But the king and queen of Spain also kind of he saw as his parents.
Really? What?
He didn't literally see them as his parents, but when he used them, they were a fill-in for his parents.
Oh wow.
So there might be a picture in front of the king and queen of Spain where he is humbled before them. I mean, you have to also understand that a lot of his work, because he's gay, and there's a lot of the work dealt with sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Early on, it was kind of undercurrents of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
After he retired, he did a series of pictures called the War Series, where the sexuality became much more prevalent, where he was dealing with war, sex, and religion. He grew up Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and which is a pretty potent combination.
Yeah, I would say. Definitely.
And then these interesting background in terms of the religion. I mean, his during the war, the Second World War, he was a teenager, and it was 1942, 1943, and his father was away fighting, in the war, and he, his mother, and sister moved in with the grandfather on the New Jersey coast.
Mm-hmm.
And the grandfather was a very cold, kind of a cold, severe, fish.
Right.
Not very warm.
Right.
But he was very wealthy, and in the house where they moved in with the grandfather actually had a chapel.
Uh huh.
And he and the sister would often go and play, do play act. The grandfather was Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and they would John would be the priest, and the sister would be a congregant. Maybe they would do the confession, but it was all this play acting in the chapel, which is kind of unusual.
Yeah, but lots of room for imagination, I would suppose.
Well, that's the thing about him. He is an incredibly imaginative artist. I mean, it's very unusual that you can work with an artist for as long as I've worked with him, where an artist can actually make a new, continue to make interesting work where you can do an exhibition every 2 to 2.5 years. It's kind of very unusual.
Right. Yeah, that is unusual. So you've been working with him a long time. So what's he like as a person, or what was he like as a person?
Originally, I thought it was really interesting because remember there was a show, you're too young to remember, but there was a show on TV called Mr. Peepers, and Mr. Peepers was a high school science teacher, right?
Uh-huh.
Something like that?
Yeah.
very buttoned-down guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, when you look at him, he's very, there's no earrings, he's very, very conventional looking, but often I think the most conventional people are the ones that do the most interesting things.
Absolutely.
Whereas the people who are the most flamboyant, in their dress and, how they present themselves, that's how they express themselves.
Right.
Where people who don't do that have other ways of expressing themselves. With him, it would be with his art.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. I like that. So how long had he been doing art? I guess you said he's been doing it forever, pretty much, right?
Me?
John O'Reilly.
Well, yeah, I think he's all. I would say mature work since the late '60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was always doing it. Yeah, both he and his partner were artists. They were making art when they were in Spain together for a while after he left UNH. He was only at UNH for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone to the University of New Hampshire also, and we were asked to go up and talk to the kids about maybe 10 years ago. And it was really a kick because I was walking on the campus with him, and I said to him, what was it like being a gay man in Durham, New Hampshire? In the late '50s, and he said, everybody was always trying to fix him up with the theater, with the young woman who was theater.
Yeah.
So there were, so there was always that. So you were basically closeted.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'd imagine so.
It's another, kind of a, very, it's a suppressed way of living.
Right. I can't imagine it was easy.
No. No, and I think he realized early on that he could not be. I think he could not be the kind of artist he wanted to be and still teach.
Right.
And I think that's when he decided that he's not going to pursue a teaching career. He's going to find another way to make a living, and that's how they came upon the art therapy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, that's. But I had a question so he was doing the teaching and the art therapy. So was that was as a means to do his artwork? What was his art? Was his artwork the collages all along?
Well, it gave him, because he only worked 2.5 days a week, so he had a lot of time in the studio. I think that's what you were asking me, right?
Well, I was asking what was his. You had said he'd been an artist this whole time. What was his specialty, so to speak? He was doing the collages later in life, but was he always doing them or was he doing something else?
From the beginning? From the beginning, he was a collage artist, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that was always, early on, I think that he realized that was what he wanted to do, and that was what he loved and obviously was very good at.
Right, right. And they all seemed to convey a message. Was he particularly an advocate or an activist, I guess, is what I'm saying? Was there an agenda he was trying to push or to sway people as, I guess?
I wouldn't say that he was political in the work. It was more that he early on the current show that I've got up now, Occupied Territories, is a bit of an anomaly because it doesn't have a central theme.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, there was very theme oriented.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a series about war,
mm-hmm.
which I described. There was a series called Occupied Territories,
mm-hmm.
and the idea there were nudes from magazines, porno magazines, wearing German helmets placed in French landscapes,
mm-hmm.
and that was the. Because the other thing about him, I should say, is he got a wicked sense of humor.
Yeah.
So that always runs through it. Like that occupied territory speech, you know, the whole thing with Germany and France, and they have, you know, the title of the series called Occupied Territories, I think is an interesting title. Then he did a series early on in the late 70s, early 80s, using California architecture from the 50s and combining that with art history paintings.
Mm-hmm.
With landscapes mostly, so it was more about the show before this one was this, another show we call War Series.
Mm-hmm.
It had the title War Series in it, and that was basically about that period I described to you of him living in the Jersey Coast in the 40s, in the early 40s, and his impressions. As a very impressionable teenager, because if you lived on the Jersey coast then, there were U-boats off in the North Atlantic, and you couldn't have any lights on, you had to have your lights covered.
Right.
So it was very kind of, for a kid, it was kind of an exciting time in a way.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is that, again, it's not political. It's more autobiographical. It's his memories of a specific thing.
Right. Yeah, and
most of the work is autobiographical.
Right. And I guess political was the wrong word to say. I probably just more like what kind of message was he trying to convey? And I would imagine that if he was, you know, if he was gay living back then, that he did feel very repressed. And so he was probably trying to convey his autobiography show a part of himself that he felt is probably not able to convey himself. And art is a fantastic way to do that, I think.
Exactly. Well, the original War Series, interestingly enough, the titles were taken all around Worcester. You know how they have like a street corner dedicated to somebody who maybe died in a war,
yeah,
and it would have the person's name,
mm-hmm,
and it would have their rank, and it would have the year they died. And so all of the titles to those pictures, he didn't use the names, but he would use Sergeant First Class killed in 1942, you know, all of that information.
Yeah.
And of course, when you're combining sex, religion, and war,
mm-hmm,
that's a very, very combustible situation.
Oh, absolutely.
And that work was probably the most dangerous work that I showed in terms of something bad happening, you know, in the gallery. If somebody came in and saw some of those pictures,
right,
they were, you know, sacrilegious.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's very powerful and very, very... people just have all kinds of reactions to it. It's combustible reactions, I guess. but I was going to ask, so these ones that he did, like in World War II, what was the response?
To the War Series?
Yes.
Well, we had one collector who bought a lot of them. The Museum of Modern Art ended up buying one or two. So early on with him, there was always interest. You know, I was always really amazed that there was always curatorial interest in the work. And it's not like he's a household name, but in the art world, you know, particularly this part of the art world, everybody, you know, people know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So the response, I would say, the response was all over the place. I mean, some people felt that it was inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were insulted. Other people thought, I mean, basically, war is obscene, and that was the theme, you know. Killing in war itself is an obscenity.
Uh huh.
And I think that's kind of the whole theme of that. Series was, I think, that premise.
Right.
And obscenities upset people.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's, yeah, it upsets. Yeah. It upsets everyone. What's going on here? I'm sorry. My recording thing was, I was wondering what was going on. So how did you meet him?
So I met him, I had a gallery in Andover and that I opened in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been doing this a while.
Right.
And by 1984, I met him in 1985. I think, did I say that already? Because he had an exhibition at the Addison Gallery of American Art.
Yes. Yes, you did.
So that's how I met him. I saw the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, was very intrigued by the work, and I contacted him, and we've been basically working together ever since.
Cool.
So it was a good meeting, but I just happened to be living in the town where this museum was, and I saw the work there.
Uh huh. Yeah, that's
and that was my first exposure to the work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. Then this is, yeah, like you said, I think this is, these are just emotionally charged and just kind of, you're never going to get a lukewarm response to any of this.
No. Although, what's interesting is the work, the exhibition I've got up now, the work that which is called New Territories, and it was a quote taking from a Roberta Smith mention of a show that he had in New York.
Mm-hmm.
She says, and she ends up saying something I'm paraphrasing, at 85, O'Reilly is moving into new territories.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that this would be a good title for this exhibition because, in a way, it is new territory in that this is not a... The exhibition of these this recent show have nothing to do around a theme. And there's a certain, they're the most liberated, they're the freest work that I have shown of his, and he agrees with this, in terms of he's not kind of like bound by any specific subject. He can do whatever he wants in every individual collage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my theory is that at 88, you become... it's liberating, you know. When you're older, you're freer.
Definitely.
For one thing, you're not worried about the future.
Absolutely.
So you're not thinking about that. So you can think about the present, and you can think about what you want to do in the present, and kind of like that really that really frees you up quite a bit.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think age totally frees you up. You know what you've done and you know what has been done and you just don't really care about, you know, people's perception of what you're gonna do. So I think you can just do what you want.
Exactly.
I think that's freeing.
So the exhibition we've got up now, the source material are basically children's drawings from the 1930s and old master drawings from art history books.
Cool.
And he would start with one of the other as the beginning and build each collage around that, around those central pictures, without worrying about, you know, any kind of thematic thing. So the collages here I think they're a lot more about abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
And they're about surface, and they're painterly. They have a very different feel than earlier work.
Mm-hmm.
But it just shows that he is continuing to move forward.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. I love it. I love his work. I think it's fantastic. So that is really cool. So what is next for you guys? What's the next exhibition going to be for you guys?
At this point we see where we are 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we're still in the middle of this exhibition.
Right.
So it's hard to predict what's going to happen next because who knows, you know, at 88, it's like you don't want to buy any green bananas.
That's funny. I like that. Cool. But you guys, your art gallery, you do abstract expressionists. Is that correct?
No. I wouldn't say that. When you say abstract expressionist, what does that mean to you?
Let me see. That might not be the what I was going to say. That might not be the right.
Well, let me tell you. Okay, I don't want to put you on the spot either. What I don't do, I do abstraction. I do painterly abstraction, mm-hmm. but I don't show gestural abstraction, mm-hmm. which is what I kind of equate with abstract expressionism.
Okay. Okay, I misspoke. I knew that you did abstraction. I just probably wasn't, the expressionist probably wasn't the right word.
Yeah, so the gallery, you know, I show photography, I show painting. The abstraction that I show, I work with local people who work abstractly in Boston, and I also show a couple of artists who live in Cologne, Germany, mm-hmm. who work with a kind of European abstraction, which I like very much. And so, you know, it's essentially the same model as a lot of galleries. Painting and photography are the two main mediums. Occasionally there's a sculpture, but basically it's painting and photography.
Right.
Some figurative painting, and some abstract painting, and the photo stuff is like kind of all over the place.
Cool. We've got a great collection. I love it all.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much to Howard Uzerski of the Howard Uzerski Gallery in Boston, Massachusetts, for chatting with me about the John O'Reilly exhibition, which goes until April 10th, 2018. And thank you to you for listening. If you're in the Boston area, stop by the gallery. This episode is brought to you by McGinn's Roxborough Maple Irish Whiskey. Music is by Fleslicht.